Hey everybody, I'm Lisa Burwell, your host of V Speaks. What an exciting day it is. We are filming the 100th episode of the podcast. Five and a half years ago, right after COVID started, that is when we decided to add a new layer to our magazine V, which we'll talk all about in this podcast and give the history of what happened and the journey and the road that is 18 years long. And we had a consultant the first year, just kind of monitoring what we were doing, who had a very successful podcast. And they had said that only like 2% of the people that started podcasts would make it to 10 podcasts. And so I'm so humbled right now to tell you that we have defied so many odds and even being able to sit here and have this very commemorative milestone right now. So exciting. I'm so excited to introduce you to various very integral and important team members that we're going to have on camera. And we're going to just take a walk down memory lane. And in prepping for this, I really can't believe that we've done so much. And I can't believe that we're still here and we're getting better and better. But thank you for all of our advertisers, for people that ended up loving the magazine from the very first magazine, which was quite scary to embark on this endeavor. And people just continued to love us, which kind of defied all odds because people by nature are fickle. And how could people still love what we produced 18 years later? I'm honored that you have continued on this journey with us, and the advertisers, our partners, our readers, and just our fans. I cannot thank you enough for going along this journey. And honestly, all of you are the reason why we're here today, because without you, we wouldn't be here. And I thank you so much. So we're getting into some fun questions from our executive producer on the podcast here. And she wants me to read some questions, and she's going to interject as well. So we're going to have a little bantering going on. First question. Can I describe the moment when V went from an idea to actually making this a reality? And I can answer that as I remember very, very clearly what was going on at the time. It was 2008. The stock market had crashed a couple of months before. I didn't know how I was going to keep our marketing and advertising and PR firm going because so many of our clients were suspending contracts, upcoming contracts. Our area was in a very bad economic state, as was so much of the rest of the country. And many people were going out of business. And our company, the Idea Boutique, parent company, Cornerstone Marketing and Advertising, was 13 years old, and we were able to share such a good ride, and we had such good momentum. I couldn't bear the thought of having to close that, and I just didn't have a quitter mentality to me at all. I never have. So I was trying to think about like what we could do next and what kind of resources that we had that we could parlay into some new endeavor. And that was the magazine. Second question. I'm just seeing this for the first time, by the way. What was there and when did I realize that we had something special about the magazine? That is an interesting question because the magazine was God-inspired, and I knew it was something that I was supposed to do. And so because I knew that, I believed we had something very special, although I had no idea what the ride was going to entail, how long it was going to last. I just moved on out with yet another creative endeavor. And that's that. Were there any moments in the first year when I genuinely wondered whether the magazine would survive? The answer to that is yes, and maybe 1 million times. It was radical, it was scary, and stress level and energy that was required to birth the magazine was epic. I had the juice for it and I had the passion for it, but I would hardly say it was easy, comfortable, or even enjoyable.
What's one word that described V in 2008?
Frightening and exciting. I'm going to give you two. Okay, next question. Looking back on those first few years, what details make you smile now? So many. It was a very interesting first year or two in that the first cover was from New York Fashion Week at Project Runway, and we went to New York. And we actually got accepted to go there. And my husband, Jerry Burwell, who you'll meet on this journey of our conversation today, actually was a really good photographer. He's an architect by trade, but he's a good photographer. And he took all of the photos for the first probably 5 years of the magazine. And so when we're making our very first magazine and we're from the panhandle of Florida and we're there, it was definitely making a point that we were going to have a national magazine someday and that it had big plans and we were thinking very, very big. So that makes me smile. Second thing that makes me smile is that ZZ Top, Billy Givens, was on our second cover and my mom was on our third cover and Robert Redford ended up being on our fourth cover. So when you have a beginning of something that you are literally learning as you go with a lot of passion and energy because we wanted to storytell, we wanted to be interesting, we wanted to talk about things that other people weren't talking about. It was making our mark and letting us know that we were unstoppable, even though it was still scary. I didn't make a mistake. And that even though it was a struggle and an uphill battle, even to this day, 18 years later, to keep the brand and the magazine and the storytelling alive, it was good. What are some not so fun interactions you've had with celebs or their PR reps? It's a great answer that I have for you because I've mostly had, and the team has mostly had, the most wonderful reactions and reception from the PR folks. And everybody wants to be on a cover, and a PR team needs to get ink for their clients, whether they're a celebrity or not, and that's their job. So there's usually a very reciprocal, gracious relationship between the two. I've had so few bad interactions, but one that is somewhat fresh within the last year is that we wanted to put Lindsay Lohan on the cover. We got some great photos. The cover looked exceptional, and I think all the magazines look good, but this one might have even stood up like in a next level. And when interfacing with the PR firm, they did not approve it, which was the first time that ever happened in 18 years. And I was very baffled. So I continued, as I will always do, I don't say okay when someone tells me no, the first, the second, or the third, or the fourth time. So I did my normal thing that I do and about try to reason, try to figure it out. And it was just not going to go anywhere. And that was, you know what? It was good because I needed to feel that like life wasn't La La Land and you don't always get what you want. And so it's okay. But Lindsay, would have been a good cover. Next question. Is there a story in the magazine that you're especially proud of and why? That could go on for days and days and days because there are so many things that I'm so proud of that we've featured in the magazine over the years, that countless opportunities to give people, artists, a leg up that weren't getting any notoriety and it really helped their business. Featuring someone's wedding on the cover or in the magazine, the most special day of many people's lives and being able to have a storytelling portal in the magazine to be able to have them be celebrated in their special day, be celebrated. So there were so many. But I would have to say, even to this day, the most important and special one to me was when we put my mother on the cover of the third issue in like the first, second year of the magazine. That would be the second year. An old photo that she had had from when she was younger. And we always loved it. I'm one of six children. And she was so beautiful and such a great mom. And we were having a Mother's Day cover. She was battling cancer at the time. And she was alive, but in the hospital. And we were able to mail the magazine to her. And in the middle of the night, nurses were coming in saying, "Is this you on the cover? Could I have your autograph?" And my mom got the biggest kick out of that. And it was a moment in a very dark time where she was able to see what I didn't know was a dream to be on the cover of a magazine when she was younger. And I never knew it. And she had never told us. She was a very like gentle soul, wasn't an egotist and egotistical. And it was kind of bizarre that I was telling, that she was telling me that she wanted to be on the cover of a magazine. And there she was. So that would have to be my most favorite. Oh, this is a good one, everybody. This is the whole other masterclass, okay? How do you balance a personal and working relationship with your spouse? So glad that I've introduced my husband in this podcast before we get to this question for sure. That was tough. I'm telling you, that was a tough ride because we're very different. It was like kind of like my vision, you know, he went along with it for sure. He's creative himself. I think he has an exceptional eye. And he was like much more wired to actually do this endeavor than I even think he thought, even to this day, that he was. He played an integral role, especially at the beginning of like helping birth the magazine. But we did have a few rows. And by a few, I mean more than a few in the first couple of years. But we would, you know, you have to get through it. You would, you know, figure out like how to get around it. We were both committed to it. And it was like became almost like an art of like, have an argument, get over it, have an argument, get over it, make a magazine. So it's all good though. That ended up getting a lot better over the years because, you know, fighting is really exhausting. Next question. How has the mission of V remained the same and how has it evolved? Good question. It has stayed the same. And the ethos and the heart of the magazine is literally still and was a goal to tell stories with heart and soul, a goal to tell stories that nobody else was telling, a goal to have everyone, and by that we coined the everyman, where so many different stories were told about people. I remember some people at the beginning said, "You're putting too many articles in the magazine. There should be more ads instead." And that is actually the correct way to make money in a magazine is to have 30% editorial and 70% ads. For a very long time, it was opposite. And people were saying, "How are you going to keep having stories and content if you have so many?" And I said, "Well, people are interesting and everyone's interesting and has a story to tell, and how will that ever go away?" Super happy to have this conversation with my husband, Jerry Burwell, who I've mentioned already that we've been on this journey together for 18 years, but we're coming up on our 30-year anniversary, September 29th. So, you know, it's been like a ride of fantastical and epic proportions that most people don't get to do. But one thing that I want to tell you and the listeners is that a lot of times over the years, I feel like you've definitely been the unsung hero, the behind the scenes guy that like you don't have a big ego. You help and assist like so many people and you don't need the spotlight, but you know, you should really get, this should really be a moment for me to tell you that it's like definitely, it's time to get in the spotlight for a second or two and to enjoy the fruits of your labor that you had to toil in, because it has been very difficult and it's been hard. And I think it's been harder for you because you don't have the same zany personality that I have or the creative wackiness. And I don't think you like tightrope walking as much as I do or at all. So there's definitely like two completely different personalities at play here. And I know at times this was like a really, really hard endeavor for you to do, like really, really, really big. And you had to be a really big person to be able to like let it breathe and see it through to the end. And I don't know if either one of us thought that this this adventure was going to last 18 years, but we have worked together since the day we met. You being an architect and me owning the marketing and public relations company. And we always just like work together. And my dad had said, you can't work together. I go, why? He's like, oh, that's a recipe for divorce. Everyone gets a divorce that works together. And like over the years, so many people have said, you can't work with your husband. It's just not going to work. This mm-hmm. doesn't work. And we always just didn't listen to it because it was good. And I really love your eye and your creativeness and, you know, really detailed, and you're very smart. And there's just a lot of things that you've brought to the table, and the infrastructure in the company, both the marketing company and the magazine, you know, because you're an architect, you architected like so much of the business that architectural mind and order and hierarchy like served the company and the magazine really well. So I just wanted to say all that, and I don't know if that makes it all go down any easier because it's definitely been tough and harder on you than me, because I like jumping out of a plane, you know, it's fun.
Oh, that's for sure. But since starting our watching of podcasts, I've always wanted to say this. Thank you for having me.
Hysterical.
And that was a beautiful introduction. Thank you. Oh,
thanks. That's funny.
So many things were said that I would love to reply to. You definitely do tightrope walking. I'm the type of person that definitely needs a net underneath that tightrope. What else did you touch on there? The architecting of the company.
Yeah.
Yeah, the structure, systems. I'm big on that,
and
you're not. And
but I appreciate it. Like, well, once it's done, once it works,
yeah, once it's
I
done,
love it.
Yeah.
But other than that, I have zero interest in it.
Zero interest. And when you hear about the having it introduced, you're like,
oh yeah,
another system. I don't like systems.
Yeah. Arguments,
but
about
then
that.
And then when you see it in place, you're
it works.
This is great.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
So it's been a ride.
It's been a ride.
We're actually now six months into our 19th year.
Really? Yep. Didn't even know that.
Okay. And then 30 years for our wedding anniversary. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wouldn't have had it any other way. Working side by side, obviously. First from our humble one of our bedrooms that we share as both of our businesses, which drove us crazy at times. Mm-hmm. You on one side of the room and me on the other, who's a quiet person who's designing, and you on the
talking all
marketing and PR mm-hmm. on the phone with your clients all day long. Just like, yeah. Okay, but this is a juxtaposition.
All right, big time. So big time. But like, I know, and I told you this like fairly recently, there's no way we could have done it. Like all the conversations that, and the people and the company that have been vital and super important to the success. And I know we're really different, obviously, in how we approach things, but I do have a really big understanding that I could not have done it on my own, even though I'm the creative and I have the vision for it, if the undergirding, if the structure, if all of those things were not in place and I wasn't going to be able to like care about it or put that in place, you know, it wouldn't stand. So, and I know it was harder for you because, you know, you wanted to do different things a lot of the time. And, but it was how we got here and how we were able to stay here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's real. And I hope you feel some satisfaction for all the sacrifice that you had to make for that, because you did have to make a lot of sacrifices.
Well, we both had to make a lot of sacrifices, and that's things, a lot of sacrifices people would don't even know, you know, and we'll never know. And that's the thing. One of the things about running a business is that you do have to sacrifice a lot, but publishing is very scary. Especially print. Print publishing has been very challenging financially. Some of the things that a vision that came to mind a little while ago watching you do this and thinking about the almost 19 years we've been doing it, sometimes you get sideswiped. And that, I don't know if you saw the news clip earlier in the morning where the guy got hit by the buffalo and mm-hmm. went flying in the air. Mm-hmm. Like that's sometimes what like? That's what you feel like.
Well, yeah.
Like, wow, I didn't see that one coming,
right.
You know?
Right.
And, mm-hmm. And it can be very unexpected, yeah. And it can be super gratifying at the same time. Mm-hmm. So when I look back at all of the 153 issues that we've done, I mean, it's been an amazing ride.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like it's not been 19 years. It feels like, and I kind of mean this in a good way, it's been a lot longer than 19 years. I feel like we've been publishing this magazine for 100 years. We've done so much.
Yeah, we've done so much.
We've packed so much into the 19 years. And when I look back at some of these issues from going back 19 years, I just go, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the people that we've met, you know, some of the highlights that I would like to just kind of say is meeting Carlo Pieroni and his wife, Carol Wilson, amazing photographer, mm-hmm. and she is an amazing stylist.
Mm-hmm. Who, by the way, I'll interject, photographer, Kristen Chenoweth, Tina mm-hmm. Brown,
mm-hmm.
your favorite cover with Darby on it,
mm-hmm.
and I know there are several others, I can't think of it right now. Oh, Ashley Longshore, Bergdorf's.
Yes.
He photographed that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's maybe one or two other M's mm-hmm, in there too, mm-hmm. but yeah, that issue of the February or March of 2013 with the Farm to Table, mm-hmm. which is very dear to my heart for a couple of reasons. One, that cover is one of my favorites of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I think Carlo and Carol did an amazing job. They worked so hard on that.
Mm-hmm. As did you.
As I did, well, not so much on the cover.
No, on the hail bank.
On the event.
Yeah, you know, making that, the event happen.
Yeah. But the funny thing about that cover shoot is that horse.
Yeah.
He was a character.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting, everyone cut a shot, you know, up against that fence. And that horse was trying to eat my hair.
Yeah.
And every time I turn around, he'd be like, what? And then someone would say, hey, he's trying to eat. And I have the photo to prove it. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. He's trying to eat my head off.
Yeah, we need to show that photo. That's a good one. Yeah,
That was a trip.
But you had to do your architecting when the event wasn't going right and Emeril Lagasse was going to be there.
Oh, we didn't have a
venue. We didn't have
a venue.
We didn't. Well, we had the barn, but then like nobody figured out how the lights were going to be.
Yeah, the barn was a big equestrian indoor dressage area.
Yeah,
and but you couldn't do an event just in that space.
But you had to figure out how to make like the haze of bale.
I created a space in the space.
Yeah. Well, that was in like 5 hours or something like that. It was crazy.
Well, we went over there to check it out. With the event consultant, Carrie, who did an amazing job, Carrie DiGregorio. Mm-hmm. And we said, how are we going to make an event venue out of the space? And we walked around. I eyeballed these huge bales of hay. I mean, they're like almost eight to 10 feet in diameter. And I said, how do you move these things around? And they said, well, you got this forklift. And I went back to my office and figured out a way to create an intimate space. And
it was beautiful.
And with Carrie's help, we got the table in there and all of those people, and it just created.
It was magical.
It was totally magical.
But that's just one more thing that nobody knows, that when you have a company like this, that you would have to do that as well as everything else that you would have to do when putting an event on like that, because you have to wear like so many hats.
And it was an amazing event. Mm-hmm. With Emeril Lagasse and Phil
McDonald.
Phil McDonald. Mm-hmm. Chef Phil McDonald.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Well, what do you hope happens in the future?
Mm. Pay dirt.
Mm-hmm.
There's been the teams that we've had over the years, a mixture of the teams of the members has been truly amazing. And I do want to do a shout out for Jordan. Thank mm-hmm. you, Jordan, for your many years of amazing service. And
our existing team now.
Our existing team. We can't do it without them.
Right.
And I would love to be able to take it to the next level, that mm-hmm. V gets to the next level, mm-hmm. and that everyone gets to enjoy in the reaping the rewards
mm-hmm.
as well as us and you. I can't say enough of how impressive you are.
Thank you.
In what you have done, leading the charge. It takes an amazing stamina. Stamina is probably one of the biggest things. Faith,
mm-hmm.
and lots of vitamins.
Yes, awesome. Well, I hope you feel the love in that, like, you're recognized and you weren't always visible, but you were always there and you were always important to everything that we've done and vital to everything we've done.
I do.
Good.
I do. And I'm glad to have been part of it. I don't know. I hope that I can help to continue to grow it with the next
iteration.
Mm-hmm. And it's been an amazing ride. It's been super gratifying, and I look forward to what's to come.
Me too. Well, we're continuing on our journey, and boy, has this been a long journey. And my comrade, my friend, the editor of the magazine, who's been with us for 14 plus years, Jordan Staggs is in the house.
So happy to be here. We've got a lot to talk about, and it's always a good time when we take a little trip down memory lane. So
true. But how can you be nervous? Like, we've done this before. We've done so many things that have been like a wild ride. And and you're a thespian.
Yeah.
You're an actress.
But I'm always a little nervous, like, at the beginning, you know, and then it gets rolling. So it's good.
And you helm your own podcast, which I love. The V Book Club, and you're very, very good at it. And I asked you to do it for maybe 1 or 2 years. I said, Jordan, you should have a podcast. That
I was going to say you had to make me do it. Well, I'm glad that we did.
I strongly suggested mm-hmm. it for a while, and you didn't seem to have too much of an interest in it. And then I let it go, and then I introduced it again, and then maybe after, I don't know, a year and a half or something like that, you go, mm-hmm. you know, okay. And then you sat behind the mic, and then I watched your first podcast, which was who? What was your first?
The very first one was David Yarrow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know. It was a big deal.
And you did a really good job, and I could tell you were comfortable, and I'm like, she likes this. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I thought it was a good
thing. It was fun. You know, I think it's one of those things like a lot of people have, like, I don't like the sound of my voice. And so doing a podcast, I was like, oh, that's like all it's going to be. And I'm going to be hyper fixated on that. Yep. But getting into it, it was like, okay, I've been doing this. I've been mm-hmm. interviewing people for stories for years on the phone and even before that. So it's,
you know what you're doing
on the phone and in person. And it really becomes the same kind of thing. It's just a conversation. So,
yeah.
And then I don't have to take notes.
Right. How good is that? And you're very good at it too. Very personable. I think your last podcast was, one of your last podcasts that you recorded was regarding Gulf Coast Jam.
Yes.
And visually, and just like the content and everything of Rendy Lovelady, mm-hmm. who is the owner, founder, and producer of Gulf Coast Jam. Mm-hmm. That was one of my favorite podcasts of both of our podcasts.
Thank you. That company's done.
I loved how it looked. It was so like old movie star, old musician, because he was the producer for 14.
He was the manager for many different bands over the years, Van Halen being one of them. And we did the interview in his house at a piano, and there's a Van Halen guitar behind him. It's autographed, and there's memorabilia everywhere and Grammys sitting on the piano. And just walking into that house was like, wow, this is real. I called it the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yes.
That's what it felt like. So yeah, it was a really fun interview.
Yeah, it was so good. So I'm loving that you're doing that, because like we've been talking about like how we were growing the brand, and with like V Speaks that we're on right now, but like really to grow the brand there, I think there had to be like different personalities, different ages, mm-hmm. because for the magazine to really live and to, you know, have readers that can respond to different demographics, and it can be done, I think it's very, very good and unusual, because most products are just trying to like capture that one demo.
Right.
But we have several demos, mm-hmm. and part of like knowing that, and then knowing that like there are going to be some people, and maybe a lot, that don't want to listen to me and like what my vibe is, but they want to listen to you, you know? And so I think it's really good.
Yeah. And it's just it's another layer, like you said, of everything that we do. And when you look in our metrics, like on social media and stuff, it is interesting how wide our audience really is. So
Yeah. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. So you, you've been here for a long time. I don't know if you want to get into questions about like what we've got in front of us right now. One of them I want to start with is Katie had asked us both to pick our favorite covers. Mm-hmm. And I just went through mine last night. And then Katie showed me yours this mm-hmm. morning. And I'm like, Jordan gave you that? Because they're almost the exact same covers. Uh-huh. Not all of them, but eerily similar faves that we had.
Yeah.
You want to talk about some of yours?
We can, yeah. So we had made sort of a list of top favorites and also ones just that stood out over the years. And as you can see, we have many here. This isn't even half of it. I think we're like 150 plus issues now. But some of my favorites are here, and this one's David Yarrow's photography, which we were talking about just a second ago. So I had him on the V Book Club podcast as our first guest, and he's a photographer from Scotland originally and is now probably one of the top commercial and fine art photographers in the world. And he had just put out a new coffee table book a few years ago. So we got copies of that, and it's an enormous book. Like the UPS guy didn't even want to bring it all the way to the door because the box was so big and it had three copies in it. But it was really, really fun to get to interview him. He was at a hotel in LA during the time, so it was a remote Zoom interview. And it was just all about storytelling, and that was what his book is called. It's storytelling. And it was like, what a perfect
Kickoff
for mm-hmm. V Book Club, because that's really what we focus on. It doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily have to be someone who's written a book. It doesn't have to be about a book. I mean, we did Gulf Coast Jam. Mm-hmm. And it's storytelling in all different forms. And that's something that V has celebrated from the beginning. So, yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. What are some of your others?
This one may be my all-time top favorite, which is Chantel Martin's artwork. She did this piece especially for this issue. Mm-hmm. And we met her at Digital Graffiti in Alice Beach, I believe. Mm-hmm. She also was one of the very first V Speaks speaker series people. With a live audience.
So that was the prelude to us doing a podcast someday mm-hmm. that we never knew we were going to do, mm-hmm. which is cool.
And then my favorite thing about this one is that it goes front and back. So you can spread it out.
Mm-hmm. That's the first and only time that we did that. Jerry and I had gone to New York and met her prior to her, you know, doing that. And she was really thrilled to do mm-hmm. it. And I was, like you, so amazed and happy that she wanted to do this and create that piece of art. And she was famous when we met her. And mm-hmm. man, since then, mm-hmm. she's a lot more famous. I mean, worldwide, super famous with clothing and like, collabs with like huge companies and just her unique style that she has. A lot of things in New York, but mm-hmm. at Tokyo and elsewhere, right?
London, all over. Yeah, I mean, like all over the world now. One of my favorite things about this one was that when it came out, we did it, and then some of her friends also did it, like took the magazine all over, and then they would take pictures with it like this, like in front of their faces. So we had a whole series of people taking pictures with her artwork on the magazine.
Perfect. Really, like you can't make that up, right? Yeah. you can't buy it at all. Yeah, that was cool. She's real sweet. I love her.
This one is one of our more recent ones from December last year. As you can see, it's a holiday issue. This is artwork, photography by Brad Walls, who is an Australian photographer who lives in New York currently. And he gave us the whole backstory of this incredible shoot with all these ballerinas from three different ballets in New York. I think there were over 100 of them in the shoot. And it's all done completely candid. I mean, not candid. It was like superposed, but this is a real photo. Like none of this is Photoshopped. He spread out this enormous red carpet through this warehouse in New York and then had a crane that like looked down over the top of it to take these photos. And that's kind of his whole thing, is capturing all those angles from above.
It's amazing. So beautiful. Yeah. So many people had commented that that was the most beautiful mm-hmm. magazine cover they've mm-hmm. ever seen. Not just a V cover, but that they've ever seen. And they were really emphatic about it. So another home run mm-hmm. for
us. It's really fun.
And it's beautiful.
And we tried several of his photos for this cover and loved all of them. But this one ended up being the winner.
Yeah, that was tough. It's always good to have multiple favorites that mm-hmm. you love. And it happens a lot. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's really hard to narrow down. Yeah.
Sometimes you have one.
And sometimes
you have one, and that's
more than once. We've had only one, and your sister-in-law was one of them, mm-hmm. Lauren. That was just the only mm-hmm. cover photo that was going to work, and she was on the cover as a beautiful bride. She's been a two-time cover.
Yep.
So the one of her
in the orange dress. Summertime.
Yeah, that was so beautiful. Uh-huh. Yeah, many, many years ago. But yeah, that's so fun. It's fun to have celebrities on the cover.
Uh huh.
It's very cool, obviously. That's kind of what the magazine business kind of sells and thrives, and newsstands. Sales are usually a lot better when there's a celeb on the cover. But what I love about the magazine is how fluid we can be, mm-hmm. and we can put anybody on the cover, anything on the cover, and still love it. And I like that we don't always have a celebrity mm-hmm. on the cover, because like the everyman story ethos that we have about celebrating everyone, if all we celebrated were celebs, which I like doing,
sure.
and it's cool, uh-huh. but I equally love not having mm-hmm. celebrities on every cover, because then you're not in a box.
Right. We've never been in a box.
No. We don't
We've gone from celebrities to artwork to homes to, I mean, we had a Picasso on the cover one time.
That was beautiful.
It was a really cool issue. So
yeah,
you never know.
That was really
what you're
good. That actually is one of my favorites. But I have so many.
I do. I think I grabbed that one last night as I was going through a ton of favorites.
Yeah,
but
that was amazing.
Yep. And then we have. So this is one of my favorites too. Who is Ty Hunter? Who's a celebrity stylist. So, you know, most, like a lot of people may not know him, but he's Beyonce's stylist.
For many years.
Styled many celebrities. And did this photo shoot with a friend of his who was a designer and fellow stylist whose name was Dapper Africa in New York. And so this one was really like fun, colorful, also just very poignant. I think they were, you know, they talked about being brothers and taking care of each other. And it was just such a cool story through the fashion and also that sort of cultural perspective. I really loved that.
A funny sidebar about that is, you know, I struck up a relationship with Ty and I really, we like sort of like bonded by email and, you know, texting and everything. I liked his platform and I liked what he said, like a lot of inspirational, like motivational things. And I would like, you know, kind of consume all of his content. And I really liked him a lot. And then we were sponsoring a Christian Siriano grand opening of his flagship store that Cary Grant used to live in. Townhouse in New York.
Became his store.
And then, you know, Christian asked us if we would co-host it with Legally Blonde.
Clueless.
Clueless.
Yes. Alicia Silverstone. Alicia Silverstone. Yeah.
So we're in New York and we're co-hosting something with Alicia Silverstone and we're going, really? Okay. this is wild. And it was an incredibly cool New York City party. And the fun of that is like, we don't live there, but I had asked Ty, I said, hey, Christian Siriano is having a grand opening. Will you come? And he said, yes. So I was standing at the front door with Christian and my back is to the front door and Christian's going, is that Ty Hunter? Like, is that? And I go, yeah, I invited him. And I invited Ashley Longshore too. And he goes, Ashley Longshore and Ty Hunter at my party? And I go, Deborah Messing, is that your party?
Right.
And who else was there? Hunger Games.
Yes.
Do you remember? She was
one of them.
One of them. And
no, it wasn't Jennifer Lawrence. No. It was.
I can't remember. Wow, wasn't that crazy? Anyway, it was like
super
cool and swanky. And my nephews live in like, you know, New York and they're like big, like investment and models and all that kind of stuff. And I invited them to the party as well. And they came and they've lived in New York for like 15 years. Mm-hmm. And they said, we've lived here for 15 years and we've never seen any of these people in New York the entire time. We lived here. Like what like universe are you living in that we live here and we don't even know this side of New York because it was very, very cool. Mm-hmm. And the place was packed and that was super fun. And one of the many, many wild, crazy rides that you can't make up that actually really did happen.
Right.
And seeing as we're kind of talking like New York centric right now, we can segue to Tina Brown being on the cover.
Yes.
Which is one of both of our favorites as well.
Pull that one out too.
And so for everyone listening there, Tina Brown was the editor of Vanity Fair for over 20 years, The New Yorker for about 10, and she founded the Daily Beast. And as a journalism minor and a speech and communications degree that I earned, I would consume all of those magazines and I would think she was like the goddess of, you know, the magazine industry. Before I ever knew I would have a magazine. And we met Tina at an event in Charleston at the literary festival that V was sponsoring. And she was the speaker and we sponsored her being the speaker. And she was talking about from the stage of a packed the oldest theater in the country.
Right.
And she was talking about how hard it is to make a magazine. And if she had to run a magazine right now, she wouldn't know what to do and doesn't know how it can sustain itself. And if you just have a magazine with ad revenue, there was no way it was going to be able to stay open. And I'm like sitting in the audience going, well, that's what we do. And like, we're still open. So like it can be. But anyway, she had just written a book. She's written many books on the royal family. And she had just, so there was a book signing and then we met her and then asked her if she would be on the cover. I believe it's the first and only cover that she's been on because she was the one that put Demi Moore on Vanity Fair when she was pregnant.
Right.
And naked, which was like a huge, you know, she was an outlier and a renegade for doing that. And she and Anna Wintour knew each other in London, and they worked for the publishing house Condé Nast, and they were both there. And then they both decided, well, I'll take Vanity Fair and you take Vogue. But they've known each other for that long. Mm-hmm. And so, like, for me, probably more than almost anybody, I couldn't believe she was going to be on the cover. And we went to her apartment in New York,
yep.
and we photographed her there, and we dressed her, and we had a stylist and worked with her stylist. Mm-hmm. And it's like so right up there with like the top three things that have been the coolest thing that have happened, you know, for me professionally. And she was lovely, and she's tough, you know, and she's like a really good writer, and she ruled the roost and in the world. And she was friends with Princess Diana.
Right.
I mean, it was just like a whole other thing. And I couldn't believe we were in her apartment and dressing her. And she ended up buying the clothes that we, you know, spec for her, loving them. Mm-hmm. And then Carlo Pieroni, like our lead photographer, when we needed to get the right photo in a New York minute, literally, and he could pull it off, he did. And that was like just fascinating. And then she was saying to me, well, who owns this magazine? And like, this is going to be on the newsstands. It's not just digital, because she didn't really kind of think that there could be magazines that were print and not just digital. And then she was like, well, who's the publisher? And I'm like, well, I'm the publisher. And she was like so confused. And she said, well, how are you still open? And then, and she goes, but who owns it? And I go, me.
I do.
And she went, really? And it was just like, it was an alternate universe experience for me. Wondering like what planet I was on, that like someone of that caliber who I had like looked up to for so many years, like was mystified how we could be doing what we're doing.
And she loved it. She loved the feature. I mean, you know, sending it to her afterwards, and that was was incredible for all of us to know that she really liked what we created for her. So.
And she had created that nonprofit for women. What was that called?
Is it Women of the World?
Women of the World. And so I got to go to that and listen to her. And then Oprah Winfrey was there. Several other people. It was just very fascinating. And that's like partly like what we wrote about as well. But anyway, it was just like pretty amazing, like the journey and the doors that are able to be opened. Mm-hmm. And I've said this many times to people, that the magazine was a key to enter doors that otherwise we would never have been able to walk through. Mm-hmm. And I say it again and again and again, because we would not have had these experiences. And even being invited to like really like probably nothing.
Anywhere.
Yeah. Anywhere, right? I mean, and so that kind of blows my mind too, in that I never really thought of it this way that I'm about to say, but like the power of the pen, the power of a magazine that people still really adore and kind of respect that medium, even though many magazines have gone out of business and are only digital. But I think there's it's still very important to what people are interested in consuming. If you want to say a real quick sidebar of what the night before was like, go for it. When we went to New York on this one, this was like another alternate universe experience.
So yeah, we were going to New York to shoot this cover. And oh, look, there's a David Yarrow photo on the ad on the back. But so we got there. Oh my God. So we got to New York around 2 PM probably. It may have been a little later than that. And we had tickets to go see Hamilton that night.
Yeah, but it was torrential rain.
It was a torrential downpour. We got to our hotel, changed really quickly. We're getting ready. We're trying to go to the theater. Couldn't get a car.
Couldn't get a taxi.
Yeah, couldn't and even I'm like, get a I didn't taxi think that was or possible. An Uber or anything, because it was raining so badly. Yeah. They were awful. So we're like, okay, well, we'll walk, I guess. It's not that far, right? You know, that's like people that don't live in New York. We're like, it's not that far. We'll do it.
Because we were going to see Hamilton.
And it wasn't, but it was raining really hard. And we made it like, I don't know, 10 minutes to spare, maybe.
Yeah.
wet. but then got to see Hamilton, and it was like one of the best Broadway shows that I think any of us had ever seen.
Ever.
We were all blown away by the end of it, and we're like, this is the best night ever.
Yeah.
And then we, I think, got Olive Garden in Times Square at like
midnight. Because nothing else was open, yeah, or we didn't know where to go. So, yeah.
And then, yeah, the next morning, got up, went to find flowers for this photo shoot, and went around. We were staying close to Grand Central Station, so we ended up getting flowers at the market there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was
doing another photo shoot.
A crazy couple of days, and then came back, and that was right before the pandemic hit. So it was like a couple of months before. Yeah.
I know on a podcast that we did 5 years ago, I asked you to rap a Hamilton tune. Mm-hmm. And I won't ask you again unless you really beg me to.
No, you can go watch that previous episode to get that.
Because
if you want.
That was amazing. Yeah. And could you still do it though?
Oh, absolutely.
You could?
I still do it frequently in the
car. Well, I don't want to be repetitive, but man, it was good. That was a good rap.
We're not doing it this time.
Okay, I didn't think so.
It was fun though.
Yeah, it was really fun.
And then... yeah, I think I recited some poetry in that episode. You can all go see.
Yes, there. Yes, your first poem.
Yeah,
from when you were in when you were nine.
Like nine. Yeah.
Okay. See. Okay. yeah. So many things. So maybe we should get to our questions. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That we
yes,
have
some
here.
Questions for us.
Okay. I'll let you. You can take it, Jordan.
Yeah. Both excited and nervous for these. Which one should we start with?
Anyone you want.
Here's one. Okay. So how is your editing style evolved over the years? I always knew that I wanted to be an editor. Well, like since I was in college, I went to school for journalism at the University of Alabama, and I took an editing class as part of my degree. And I remember in either like a midterm or a final at the end of my grading, my professor wrote, "Become an editor." And I was like, okay, like that's,
wow.
I think that's what I want to do. And I had been yearbook editor and almost love that part of it more than writing. I do love to write, but editing something else and making it better, but keeping that original person's, I would say, soul and voice is something that I really love doing. As far as it evolving over the years since I've been with V, gosh, it's just gotten better. I don't know that it's really changed, but I've definitely learned more and gotten better at being able to do that, being able to keep the original person's thought and voice in a story. And
which is hard to do.
Props to Margaret Stevenson, who was our proofreader for many years and is Jerry Burwell's sister, who taught me a lot about commas and M dashes and where things should go and
many
the way that just different rules that even I didn't know after going through journalism school. So she definitely made me a better writer and a better editor. So thank you, Margaret.
Oh, that's nice. So sweet. She's going to love that.
Yeah. What about you?
The style and all that?
You think your editing or writing style has changed over the years?
I think my style has changed over the years. And I mean style. I don't even mean necessarily like writing chops like that have like mega enhanced. Mm-hmm. But what has evolved for me is being able to, I guess, tell a story like from the heart with like a lot more of my own thoughts and emotions. Mm-hmm. And of late, I find that to be the only kind of writing that I'm interested in doing right now.
Yeah.
And it changed. Where I never loved sharing too much about myself many years ago, even though I seem like I'm an extrovert. I'm definitely an introverted extrovert, and I only play the part of a extrovert.
Just play
some
one
role
on TV.
I play one. Yeah. But I didn't want to write too many. Uh-huh. I didn't want to reveal that many things about myself at the beginning, and I felt like very exposed and naked and uncomfortable, and I was very uncomfortable with that, and had to get used to it because I was definitely like had to own the face of it and
and
envisioning the magazine. It was very, very uncomfortable at the beginning. And then I hated my writing style midway, and I wanted to be quickly such a much better writer than I was. And then I tried really hard to do that, and I evolved to some level. But of late, like I'd say in the last 2 years, I just write totally from the heart. Mm-hmm. And I no longer care or filter out my emotions and care if somebody likes it or not, as long as I feel I told the story that I felt was true to me.
Right.
That's all I want.
Yeah. And I've seen that. You know, I've seen you do that and evolve and grow and become more introspective in your notes in every mm-hmm. issue and things like that over the years. So it's interesting yeah. to like hear you say it because then
yeah, because you've noticed yeah, it. Yeah, because uh-huh. I don't think I ever said it. But
and
yeah.
you, I think you did used to be a little more like, well, what do you think people are going to think about this one? And now you're just like, no, I don't care. I'm telling my story.
I don't care. Yeah, like it or leave it. I don't care. It's all I got.
Yeah. Here's one. I'll let you answer first. What's an article you'll never forget?
Super, super hard.
I know there's so many.
Oh my gosh, that's so many. I mean, I think I'm going to have to like defer to the Wayback Machine and say the one and only time that we ever did the Mother's mm-hmm. Day issue where myself and Jerry and any team member that worked for us at the time wanted to pay tribute to their mom. And that's the one that my mom was on mm-hmm. the cover of. And I knew I've never seen a magazine do a tribute to moms before like that. So in such a public platform. And I knew the magazine was distributed nationally. And like it seemed like such a possible local yokel thing to do, mm-hmm. you know. But I still hear people telling me, even as recently as a month ago, that they love that issue, Mother's Day issue, and that they've never thrown it away.
Yeah.
It was Lisa, who was really good friends with Kelly that works at the Ascension now.
Oh, uh-huh. Lisa Wainwright.
Yes. Right? Well, uh-huh. She said uh-huh. it.
That's so sweet.
And she said she can't, like, yeah. throw it away.
It's a beautiful issue.
It's beautiful, and it was definitely at the very beginning of our walk, and there have been so many other more, like, fantastical or celebrity-minded things, but that taught me to do what I thought was good and creative and right.
Mm-hmm.
And even though nobody else did it before and just follow my star, so to speak, it taught me that I should always do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. What about you?
So many. So like a lot of the ones that we just mentioned, and then I would say going back into Hamilton, which we have this one here, is Leslie Odom Jr.
Yes.
On the cover of our May 2020 issue, which we got to talk to him on the phone during COVID. He was at his house in LA, and it was just such a cool interview. He was so nice, so yes. genuine, so grateful that we were doing that in the middle of a time when, you know, theaters were shutting down and he couldn't perform, and we were
so
still
gracious.
Got to talk to him about doing all the things that he loves. So that's definitely a special one for me. And then I would say another one is I've done a couple of sort of touristy travel pieces on my hometown, Florence, Alabama, and like Muscle Shoals area. Some of them with Billy Reed, who puts on a big party there every once in a while called the Shindig.
That you've been
to.
He's
a big fashion designer who got his start in New York and ended up moving to this little town in Alabama and has his flagship store there. So those are really special to me because I get to show off my.
Do you have the Billy roots. Reed cover?
I don't have the cover okay, here, but we'll have bad. To.
We'll
show
find
it.
Yeah. We'll show it. Yeah. Yeah. That was a big deal.
Uh-huh. It was,
and
it was,
I and you introduced me so fun, to so. Billy Reed actually. Mm-hmm. And then when we were in Charleston, like many times doing the literary festival, you know, we got to go in the store and then you went up to the event and then you got to get all sorts of swag up
yep.
there. Right. And
yep.
clothes and. yeah, very
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, it's a fun time. He does his runway show there. I mean, it was yep. crazy sitting next to Fern Malice, who yes. founded New York Fashion Week in Florence, Alabama, in a little Shoals theater where yeah. I performed Grease when I was 16 years old. So
that's crazy.
Like, it's crazy.
That's so crazy. Well, that's fun.
So like you were talking about all the things that,
yeah.
the doors that V opens up, and just things that we never thought that we would do is
yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's absolutely amazing. I will just add one thing uh-huh. that was also like to your point about the door opening thing in the second issue, ZZ Top, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that we had on the cover, Billy Gibbons. That was the second cover.
Yeah,
the third, yeah, second one, in the Wayback Machine 18 years ago, and. The art director and his wife went and covered it, Eric and Jesse. and they covered an event that was in Enterprise, Alabama, that many people were at, like very, like a lot more famous.
Like, I think, was Taylor Swift there?
Taylor Swift was there.
Before
like everything exploded, and some other really, really big names that had all got together. And wasn't Rendy?
I believe Rendy produced it.
Rendy produced it.
So okay, it was so called Bama Jam.
Bama Jam. And they raised money for the town of Enterprise, Alabama, that was ravaged by a tornado. And so they came back with photos. We wanted, ZZ Top on the cover. It was only our second one. We first opened. And we put it together and we did the mock-up and we wrote the article. And then we sent it to his manager. And I asked, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, we did this. I just sent it to you. You know, could we have your permission to let the cover run? And he said, absolutely not. ZZ Top doesn't do a cover for less than $100,000. And even that would be a good deal. And I'm like, oh, I don't have $100,000 to pay them. And I can't do it. But could you show this to them? And just see? And he was like, you could tell on the phone, he just was like stopped in his track. I wasn't like pushy about it.
Yeah.
I was just innocently saying, would you show it to him?
Right, just ask.
And then...
And it was for charity. So, it was for charity, right. It was for a good cause.
So I was in a meeting, and then Jerry knocked on the door, because he actually got the call from the PR rep. And it was a very short call, but he had to interrupt my meeting and say... They changed their mind. ZZ Top said you could use the photo. They love the article and you don't have to pay anything. And that was the second
one. Yeah.
So that's crazy.
That's wild.
That's wild.
But yeah, I think it goes back to the whole ethos of, you know, telling stories with heart and soul is that, you know, Kristen Chenoweth did this cover for us. And we, you know, it was because we were talking about a charity that she was involved with. And then she was also performing with Symphonia Gulf Coast, who, you know, we're paying her to be their headliner for their
10-year gala anniversary.
But it's, you know, these even big celebrities who normally charge a big fee, like if you're telling the story that they want people to know, they'll still,
they're like, passionate,
a lot of times they'll
charities.
Say yes. Yeah.
And then again, getting back to what Christian Siriano told us in Ireland when we were there, that when we, you know, sort of trepidly asked him if he would be on the cover, and I said, you know, we're probably not big enough for you to be on the cover, but he had just launched his interior design business. And he said, no, no, just wait right now. Everybody wants to be on a cover of a magazine. So yes, and like, don't like, you know, talk disparagingly, but. About it. And so we learned that like as well on our journey of our jaunt over to Ireland and all that. So what other questions do we have?
Okay. Let's see. Have we ever completely disagreed on a story or direction? Not bad. Like I can't remember any major issues.
Not major, but...
I mean, there's always going to be like differences of opinion, but...
Yeah, nothing major.
No.
Except like the one time that we were invited to the inauguration 10 years ago for Trump, President Trump. And we got invited 2 days before Jerry and I did. And I'm like, I got to go because I just want to see like what it's like to go to a presidential inauguration. And I just want to go. And I even knew then that like the world was divided 50-50. And like, if we ran an article in the magazine, 50% of the people that were reading it were going to be terribly unhappy. And I was totally on the fence about whether I wanted to write about anything politically, because I actually don't. And I don't want to take any sort of political sides, but I really did think that I couldn't pass up the opportunity, the experience, the open the door, whether, you know, it was good, bad, or indifferent. But I did write about it. And I've never written anything politically about it before, but I did pull it out of the archives last week to read it again. And I still feel good about it.
Yeah.
In that I wasn't like so much taking sides. I was trying to just give like my own personal opinion about it. And the headline 10 years ago, it was provocateurs, please don't let civility die. And I'm going to tell you right now, that headline and that 10 years ago was like prophetic almost. Like,
yeah.
Like, it almost seems like more poignant today.
It does.
Than it did then. Mm-hmm. Because, like, wow, what a ride.
I wish they had read that.
Yeah, what a ride it's all been, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I think that was, I was nervous about that happening, like, of you going there and what it was going to mean for people that read it. But I think the way that you did it, like you said, you're just documenting. Okay,
my opinions.
This is what's going on, and this is what we, you know, this is what I think about it. Not necessarily like, should this have happened or not, but
right.
Yeah, it was, yeah. It's a good piece. Like, I read it again recently, too.
You did?
Yeah.
Why did you do that? That's weird.
No, just a couple days ago, I was kind of preparing for this, I came across it, because it's in one of these issues somewhere.
Yeah, it was interesting how, like, I like the part of it about writing about it, because I knew it was, like, so controversial, is I thought it was very fair.
Mm-hmm.
And very, like, mm-hmm. non-judgy, yet still making, like, all the points that I wanted to make about what I thought.
Right.
Without being political. Do you know how hard it is to write a political story and not be, like, political?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty hard.
So, I think you did a great job with that one.
Thank you. Thank you. But that was about it, right? Like, nothing really bad.
No. We're usually on the same page. Right. Things, so.
Okay, biggest pinch me moment.
Many that we have already talked about.
I know, but there's some that we didn't talk about. I want to see if we can say it.
Is it the, well, we sort of touched on the Ireland photo shoot.
Not really, though.
That was one.
That was a pinch.
Is that the one
you're
talking about?
Okay. About that. Yeah.
So we did this big cover at 2015, 2016. We were launching Connemara Life magazine in Ireland, or we had launched it, I think, a couple years before that, which was the Irish sister magazine to V, published there, and it was all about the Western coast and the people and the businesses there. But we decided to take Christian Siriano, fashion designer, to Ireland, ship over a bunch of clothes, have a big photo shoot, and it would be the cover of Connemara Life and V for that year. And that was,
we did a really good video of that too.
Yeah, there's an incredible behind the scenes video. We hired, you know, Irish models. We had horses and dogs involved, and it was at this
Ballina
beautiful
Hinch.
Castle Hotel.
Yeah, Ballinahinch Castle. Mm-hmm. It was amazing.
Yeah. There were some shotguns involved. We didn't shoot the shotguns. They were supposed to be like the feminine hunters. Like, she was out in the rustic, lodge in Ireland getting ready to go out on a hunt, but she was in her, like, ball gown.
Well, then we have this fur.
And it was, it was a little bit controversial with
it. It was controversial because when
shotguns Christian, in the fur.
When Christian showed up and we had all this fur, he goes, well, I'm like a spokesperson for PETA. And I go, is that going to be a problem?
Yeah, that was, we didn't know that / think that through necessarily. It all worked out.
It all worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fake fur.
It was fake. It actually was, like, some of it.
Well,
most of it, maybe.
Definitely, Jordan. Some of it was.
Okay, a couple more questions. We've got, so what's one place that V has taken you that was very unexpected?
For me,
It
was when you and I went to England a couple of years ago to cover the Seaside Institute New Urbanism movement on behalf of Robert Davis in the town known as Seaside, very close to our offices. And because I'm on the board and you were writing the articles, we went in a second. I'm like, you want to go to England? Do you want to do this? I think we would go on a plane like four
do
or five
I
days.
Go to England?
Yeah, 4 or 5 days later. It was one of my favorite trips. It's just so many. It was short, but awesome. And we were the first night that we were in the hotel that was really cute and charming. Sarah Jessica Parker and her husband and their manager were the only other people in the restaurant when we were eating in the restaurant. And I'm like, should we? Shouldn't we? Should I? Shouldn't I? Should we go over and give her a copy of V magazine? And then I went up to the front desk and I said, what do you think if we did that? Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
We've been working on a deal with her for 1 year to close the deal for her to take the penthouse because they were doing a play there. Only if they had great security and no one bothered them. And I'm like, good thing
thanks
I asked.
Telling us,
yeah, so we didn't do it. Okay, what about you?
So sometimes we don't ask. One for me, I think, is that was a really good one. And I kind of like forget about that trip.
10 points.
I went to Wisconsin on an architecture tour of Frank Lloyd Wright's architecture there. That was just really cool to me. I never thought I would go.
Oh, yeah. Because you wanted to be an architect if you weren't doing what you're doing.
And that was one of my favorite trips ever. Yeah. I
think. What year was that?
It was, I think, like 2017 or 18.
Yeah. That was, you loved it there. That was a good trip.
And then, okay, what would you say is a misconception people have about the job or the industry?
I think the biggest misconception about it is that I'm going to say something I don't want to sound like it's, I don't mean this in any egotistical way at all. I think that mostly everybody who makes a magazine has no like idea of like what people want to see and read, and they don't, they think it's a formula. Mm-hmm. And we're so organic and lead creatively rather than by the bottom line, mm-hmm. and by a formula, and there it, and a lot of things lose their complete spirit and interest if you don't have a creative point of view. And I think that it's not magic. It's just something that they don't know. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I do agree with that. Yeah. And I also think one is just that the idea that like print is dead, it's
misnomer.
Obviously not.
Obviously not, yeah.
People love this magazine and so many others that are even just in our own area.
Right.
Books, I think, are selling like better than ever right now.
Since the pandemic, yes.
Yeah, so I think it's that and then just the idea that it's all glitz and glamour and celebrities, which it's not. You know, you see the covers and you see the stories and the social media side of things, but there's always so much more going on behind the scenes and so many other things we're working on, you know, months at a time, months out. Right. So,
and I also think like if you're not really, really curious and really care about people or things, and like that's just not who you are, you can't make a great magazine because if you're always following a trend rather than being a trendsetter because you listen to yourself going, I'm interested in that. And if I'm interested in it, I don't need like someone like running like stats and data if we should write something. I'm like, because if I like it, then like 80% of the population is going to like it because we're all like a lot more alike and connected than people think. So on one hand, it's harder and it's easier to do it.
Yeah.
Both.
Agreed.
Yeah. That it?
Well, that's all of our questions.
Well, that's all we have for today, which was a lot.
Come back next time.
And we could talk like a lot more because this is just like touching the surface, which is really crazy. But I'm so glad about your continuation of your podcast. I'm so happy that we're celebrating the 100th episode of V Speaks and that we can keep on continuing. You know, I love you.
I love you too.
And I always will. And thank you for everything. And thank you for being you. And thank you for the, you know, the being on the ride.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me and all You're the welcome. Incredible opportunities. I can't wait to see what's coming up next.
Yes. So. Me either.
It's going to be big.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Jordan.
Thanks.
Okay. Well, this walk down memory lane has been something like almost otherworldly because I never really think about all that we've accomplished and all the places we've been and all the stories we've written and the robust amount of magazines that we have produced both here and stateside with our magazine in Ireland that we dabbled in for 4 or 5 years. So again, I know I started out saying this has been very humbling, but it really has been humbling and an eye-opener, somewhat scary actually, to think about like all that we accomplished and all that we have done so far with a lot of grit, with a lot of courage, with a lot of tenacity, and with a never, never, never quit mentality. I'm glad that you have come on the journey with us as we've been telling it. I hope you're inspired And I hope that whatever your dream is and whatever you think that you want and can do or should do, that you should definitely do it. Thanks, everybody, for such a great ride so far, and looking forward to see where we land. Thank you for everything. So I have a few more questions before we close out the podcast here. And that is, how does the magazine and the podcast complement one another? And to tell you the truth, we're morphing with technology. We're morphing with following the tide of how content is shared and digested. And at this moment in time, the podcast is an integral component as to how the magazine survives, actually. It breathed life into the magazine along with many other things because we were staying ahead of the curve and we were following like a multi-discipline, multimedia platform. And you have to do that to stay in business. So they're inextricably connected. And I'm glad that we actually ventured out. So this is an interesting question here. Being asked, what surprised me most about becoming a podcast host? And I'll tell you this, I like it. I really like it. I like talking to people. I like listening to people. I like learning. I like conversations with people that are real and authentic and completely uncontrived. And the main goal was to always have as uncontrived as an interview as you could possibly get, because the intent wasn't anything other than interaction and communication with the guest. And I learned a lot along the way in the last 5 years myself. And even when I didn't like how some of the podcasts looked or how I was conducting the interviews, one thing I knew was that it was very authentic and I was going to keep going, just like I kept going with the magazine. I think an interview on a podcast is unmatched to an article to some degree. And I think having both an article and a podcast is kind of magic because it brings it all to life. And like I said earlier, the technology of our current day and how people consume content without a podcast, and if you have a magazine and you don't have a podcast, so behind the understanding of how communication is consumed in our day and age.
So what does that milestone of 100 episodes mean to you?
That is amazing. It means that we did what we always do, and that is see something through and to keep going. What this is going to do for us, I can't answer that question right now, but I would have to say it gives me enormous confidence in that we continue to remain forward thinking, onward, you know, Christian soldiers type of thing. Like, let's just keep moving forward and we'll see where it's going to land. But the milestone of 100 is a big deal, and I'm super grateful that people watch it and listen to it, and that we continue to be able to share stories on that medium. This next question is hard, which is, name your top 3 to 5 guests on the podcast so far. That's super, super hard. But one comes to mind is Emeril Lagasse. And obviously he's famous and everyone knows him as Emeril and the top chef, first celebrity chef in our country, basically, behind Julia Childs. I mean, he really took it to a whole new level for celebrity chefs thereafter. And he continues to be in the game. And he was an interesting and delightful guest. Emeril, you never really exactly know, like, you know, does Emeril want to be there? Is he doing me a favor? I didn't know. And he was delightful, and he was candid, and he was interesting, and he was funny, and I really enjoyed it. Top fave, Ashley Longshore, the artist. As you can see, we love her work. We have her artwork here, and been a big fan of hers for many, many years. She's irreverent. She's wild. She's engaging. She's a pop culture star. She's a great artist. And you never go wrong with anything that she's going to bring to the table, because she's a star and she's interesting and she's funny and, like I said, irreverent. And I'm very grateful that she conducted the interview. It was good. It was a good, authentic. She doesn't do anything that is not authentic anyway, so that was going to work for sure. And shoot, third one, Julian Lennon. I'd have to say, one, him agreeing to be on the podcast, and there's a story behind that that I'll tell you. And Jordan got a email pitch from a PR firm in California that Julian Lennon was doing a collab with Restoration Hardware for his black and white fine art, and they wanted to know if we would cover it. Of course, you know, Jordan brought that to the table, and of course we, you know, we were. She wrote the article. It's amazing. And it was a collab with Portia de Rossi with Restoration Hardware, and they were thrilled that we were able to write the article. And then after that, we thought, wow, this is like amazing, Julian Lennon. Let's ask him to be on V Speaks on the podcast. And they said yes. And we did one of our first Zoom podcasts of that magnitude. And he was in Monaco, and we had some technical difficulties. He was very interesting. He was guarded at the beginning because, of course, why wouldn't he be guarded? You know, he has to watch himself, the history that he has in his life. He's guarded. And we were able to have a good conversation, and I liked him a lot. And he was interesting, and just talking to someone who was in Monaco, and then I had to have the wherewithal and the cool to, like, not be super upset that there was an audio problem, and I had to, like, keep going, like, the building is burning, but keep going. But anyway, it ended up being great. And then that relationship fostered the next step we were going to have with Julian Lennon, where we asked him to be part of a V show home that we were doing, that my husband is an architect as well, and it was a home he designed, and we were doing a big V show home showcase collab. And then we said, why not? We'll ask Julian if he wants all of his artwork to be in the house, and when the house sold, it would sell with artwork. And that was maybe a year later, maybe a year and a half later. So Julian and his team come to town, and we put them up for a couple of days, and he's the celebrity guest at the V show home. And guess who's cooking? Emeril Lagasse. And that was just amazing, wonderful time. But, like, it was a series of, like, over time, building relationships, having ideas to continue to pursue something, and fostering, like, relationships that one thing begets another thing begets another thing. So I'd say those are my top three. If nothing could get in my way, name three guests you'd like to have on the podcast instantly. Okay, so this is outrageous, I know, but I'd love to have Elon Musk on the podcast. And he has fans, he has detractors, but I'm going to tell you why I love Elon, because he speaks my language, and that he does anything that he wants to do. He's an outlier, and he keeps going, but I heard an interview with him maybe in the last 4 years or so, where he thinks that everyone should just try to do anything that they want to do. Open companies, doesn't matter if they close, it doesn't matter if they fail. Failure doesn't mean anything to Elon Musk. He basically champions creating something that people were born to create. They were not born to be drones. And if you have an idea of creativity, you should do it, even if you don't make money. And guess what, Elon? Many, many times I heard that, and I wasn't making money. I'm going to keep creating. Second one that I'd like to have on the podcast is Lex Fridman. I love his podcast. He has podcasts that are like 8-9 hours long. I don't watch the whole thing, but I watch way more than you would think. I like his style. He's very, very smart. He doesn't have an ego, and he should, because, like, he's had Elon Musk on his podcast and everybody else that you could think of as well. He's interesting, and I like him. And we tried to get him on the cover of our men's issue a couple of years ago, and we were close to making that happen, but we did not close the deal on that. And then who else? Number three, would I like? Chris Stapleton. I'm going to tell you why. I just love Chris Stapleton, and I have for a long time. But we got to have press passes to go hear him at Gulf Coast Jam very recently. And one of our members of the company went and covered it and took some great content of him. I don't know if Chris Stapleton knows like exactly how famous he is, but I do, because we put that reel up on Instagram, and we have increased our numbers on social predominantly because of how many people watched and consumed his song that we shot that day. And I know we've talked about this with Jordan having a sister podcast to ours, The Book Club, and she knows everything there is to know about Gulf Coast Jam and music and probably everything else, anything else as well. But she basically interviewed the promoter and founder of Gulf Coast Jam, and that is an amazing interview. I hope you watch that interview on her book, on her podcast, The V Book Club. It's very, very well done. So just them, that's all.
What is the interview that made you the most nervous?
Julian Lennon. The reason for that is because, you know, he's John Lennon's son. He's like a, you know, incredible. He's a singer. He's a, you know, a writer. He's a photographer in his own right. And I like his music as well. So I was nervous because I knew he was a little guarded. I was nervous because I believe that interview with him sort of like was a mile marker on us turning a different corner with the magazine, getting into a different arena. And I was so thankful and sort of impressed that he said yes, that I knew that I had to have my A game on, and I had to do a really good job on that because it was him, and I wanted to do that, you know, in benefit to him agreeing to be on the podcast. But I knew I couldn't choke, and I knew I had to be very serious about making it a good podcast. Next question, is there a risk you took that ended up defining the magazine? Starting the magazine was a risk. Keeping the magazine open was a risk. Doing the podcast was a risk. Every single thing that had to do with the magazine was, and to some degree, remains a risk. And I have learned something about myself that I don't like, and I wish I didn't know. But apparently, I like walking on a tightrope and having nothing under my feet, because I guess there's a lot of adrenaline for that for me. And that's how I could do it. One word that describes V today. It's the same one that I think described V at the beginning, and that is life. And it means life in French. And the magazine still has life, and it still is life. And so there isn't a better word than that. How important is it for media brands to exist across multiple platforms today? It is so important that if you don't do it, you can't stay open and you won't be in business. Based on the last question that I just answered regarding risk, we're taking more risks because you always have to keep going. And I don't even view them as risks anymore. I just view them as like next level, next steps that we're doing, but it still is a risk. And one of them that I feel really, really good about right now is that V Podcast, The Book Club, and V Magazine is going to be on Substack very soon, most likely in the next 3 weeks to 4 weeks, tops. And we are going to populate that podcast with and that Substack with everything that we have. And I just cannot believe the sort of like the beauty of my understanding of Substack and how like a no-brainer it is for us to be able to parlay all of this content over the years and in current day, and then continue to write more content on a daily basis or a weekly basis, because basically Substack feeds and is such a amazing platform for writers, for publishers, for creatives, and for podcasting, that it seems like you have to do that. And we're so excited. And it's risky to some degree, because it's going to take a lot of work and manpower, but it also might be one of the most, that I'm the most excited about what Substack is going to do for us than I've been in a very, very long time. And I think it is just going to like take us into the stratosphere, whatever that means, but something big. And the second thing that might not sound as glamorous as that, but it's really important to me and I love it. And that's the story about how we are also going to, we have a collab in the works with Tijon Times V collab, where one of our team members, Caitlin Burris, went to cover Miami Swim Week just about 4 weeks ago. And I'm so excited to say that she had the idea and the wherewithal to set up the meeting there. And she actually curated like the various notes and the oils that will be there with a representative from Tijon. And it's really beautiful. The thing about that that I don't think Caitlin probably knew is that back about 13 years ago, maybe even longer, I wanted to have a perfume for the magazine. And I kind of like shelved that like many, many years ago, thinking like, okay, well, I can let that go. That's not top priority. And seemingly that fell back into our laps with Caitlin sort of like running point and moving forward on it. So we're launching that probably, I would say, in the next few months. And we're super excited about that. And obviously the magazine is called V, which means life. And it smells really beautiful. And you know what it smells like? It smells like life. All right. So everybody, was that a lot of information to digest or what? I mean, I'm just tired thinking about like all the journey and the stories, and so thankful for the people that are here on staff that continue to have a vision and a passion for the endeavors that we're doing. Without that and without them absolutely having passion and interest and desire to love the brand, to nurture the brand, to grow the brand, it wouldn't happen. I actually think a lot of people that used to work here that were part of the rodeo that are no longer here, and all that they did when they were here on their journey to continue the perpetuation of the magazine's life. And again, to all of you who read the magazine, who listen to the podcast, who love the brand of V, who appreciate it, again, I can't thank you enough for both, everybody that continues to support us and love us. We love you right back. And I thank you for your time and hope you keep following us on our journey. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day. Bye.